Hello and welcome to the Liftoff Membership Special. My name is Stephen Hackett, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host in suffering, Jason Snow.
You know, Stephen, this is a podcast, usually, in which you don't have to be a rocket scientist to be interested in space and related subjects, or to write a screenplay involving rocket science.
Or be an oil driller with a gun.
Let's get some oil drillers in here. This is a new it's a new podcast now. Liftoff is over. It's going to be drilling, and it's the oil drilling fan podcast.
It's yeah. So we watched Armageddon, and
goodbye, everybody. We're never coming back.
I'd only seen it one time before years ago. I didn't see it.
Me too.
I mean, I was like 12 when it came in theaters, but
I can date this because I moved into my house that I still live in February of 1999. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching this movie in our apartment that we lived in before we bought this house. So I saw it when it came out on home video in late 98, presumably. And and my reaction at the time was, wow, that's a terrible movie. I'm never going to watch it again. But in those days, I didn't know what podcasts were or what membership specials were.
Yeah. Or that your co-host would have a terrible idea.
What a world we live in. It's really Joe Steele's fault, right? Isn't it Joe Steele's fault?
Always.
I don't know.
We wanted to have Joe Steele on, but he is traveling, so he was unable to.
Unavailable. Yeah, sure. Yeah,
sure. Mm-hmm. Could it all be a ruse just to avoid this movie?
I don't want to close my eyes. I don't want to fall asleep.
You don't want to miss a thing.
I don't want to miss a thing.
You don't want to miss it.
I missed a few things in this. I'm just going to say that now. I did. I actually did miss a few things.
At one point, I got up to get a snack, and I just left it running.
Like, yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, yeah. I did that. Yeah.
I have.
And you'll miss a thing then. You know, sorry. You missed a thing.
I have a question for you, because
I hope this isn't a test.
I think I was 12 when this came out.
Armageddon quiz.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 12, 13, somewhere in there.
They're the target audience for a Michael Bay movie.
Well,
12-year-old boy.
This movie feels very much of its time to me. Like, I look at this movie and I think, oh, this movie is old because it's from the 90s. I know some people out there are dying, whatever. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In the context of 1998, when you and Mrs. Snellzone were in your apartment.
Yep.
Did it feel like other movies at the time? Like, I feel like it's aged.
No.
Pretty badly.
No. I would actually make an argument that this is actually an early example that Michael Bay, who directed this, his influence extends forward from this point.
Okay.
I think this was a new kind of movie, but it was an early example of it. You know, Michael Bay went on to make all those Transformers movies,
right,
which had a lot of similarities to this in that they were really loud with lots of explosions and didn't make a damn bit of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he learned from this movie too, because they were more fantastical and therefore not rooted in ridiculous things that were supposed to be reality but weren't. He was like, no, they're talking robots, so all bets are off.
Sure.
So I think this is like a movie. I think Michael Bay was really influential. So although it seems old in the sense that we have different kinds of these movies now that are a little more sophisticated, I do think it was kind of groundbreaking. Roger Ebert famously referred to this as a 120-minute long trailer because of the quick cuts and everything mm-hmm. that are in it. Whereas from our perspective now, less so, right? Like it's a little more modern in the sense that lots of movies are like that now. But so I hate to say that Michael Bay was super influential, but he was, and this was like an early example of him bringing his particular magic to the screen that would, lead to more nonsense, but also I think more sophistication in taking this kind of model and doing some other stuff with it. So, you know, is it an influential movie? I mean, I think it made a lot of money and it was mocked a lot. And I do think that in the sense that Hollywood was looking for more and more and more spectacle in order to get people to come out to the movie theaters and not just stay at home and watch things on TV, this is, you know, in that line. It's mm-hmm. That's what it's trying to do, and that's why it's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I saw the first few Transformer movies, the first two maybe, and like that resonates with me. Like, okay, I can see how this is the beginning or a step on a path yeah. towards what we now associate with Michael Bay's work. Like, that makes
sense.
I
only saw
me.
The first Transformer movie, and I was just like, I don't even know what I'm seeing here. Mm-hmm. You know, so. But it's sure. It's like I told you in Slack earlier, which is, you know, I'll say this for this movie, it's loud. That's one of the things that is loud. Lots of explosions, lots of things flying across the screen. Transformers mm-hmm. was like that too. I remember seeing the first Transformers movie and being like, okay, it's there's explosions.
Explosions in space, though.
Yeah, so, yeah. This movie's got the you know, on. It does. There's the, I don't know how you want to handle this. I kind of don't know if I want to walk through the plot, but mention that,
Jason?
It begins with a, this movie begins as if it is a thing you'd see at a science center, like a movie you'd see at a science center, where Charlton Heston's yeah. voiceover tells you about the Chicxulub impact that destroyed mm-hmm. the dinosaurs.
We can't show you the dinosaurs because we paid for Charlton Heston to read to you about them instead.
Yeah. Yeah, but you get to see like the rock's eye view of destroying the dinosaurs with a massive asteroid impact in the Yucatan Peninsula, and that's kind of fun. Although I did notice it made me laugh after that happens, and there's a ponderous voiceover of like, it will happen again, mm-hmm. right? Then the name of the movie comes up, Armageddon, and then it explodes. The name of the movie in the opening titles explodes. So that's the movie you're going to get, is it's that movie. Even the opening titles are loud and dumb.
You got to set the stage, right? Once the title explodes, you know what kind of movie you're in for.
Yeah, I think so. I honestly, at that point, you should, if that's not working for you, you should have just gone out of the theater and asked for your money back, because you know, after that, you know what this movie is going to be if you didn't know before.
Mm-hmm.
And the opening scene also has this like a whole space shuttle and a bunch of astronauts get killed by a shower of meteorites,
yeah,
which is
Atlantis.
Actually a lot like the movie Gravity, but again, that's a much better movie.
I wouldn't call Gravity a good movie. Just better than this.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked Gravity. Why are we not talking about that? So
next year.
But
we'll do it next year.
Did we not talk about Gravity on a previous one? I don't even remember. I don't know.
I can't remember anything before hitting play on this movie last night.
So a lot of people wrote this movie, including J.J. Abrams, apparently. So
yeah.
It was work. Maybe he was writing the jokes, because there are some jokes that are good. The premise of the movie is that an asteroid, a global killer asteroid, is spotted, and it's going to kill the entire planet and everybody on it unless they do something to get it out of the way. That is the overall premise. And then what they decide to do is you can't just throw nuclear weapons at it because that won't work. You need to, it's like holding a hand grenade. You got to wrap your hand around it so that it blows your hand mm-hmm. off. Because if you hold a hand grenade in your outstretched hand,
nothing bad
it's
happens.
Like it doesn't do anything to you.
I have a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, so they have to get drillers. They're going to drill into the asteroid. And it turns out that although they've had a drill at NASA, the astronauts are so dumb that they don't know how to use it. So the only thing that they can do, rather than train astronauts, famously, as Ben Affleck mentioned in his commentary track for this movie, they could train the astronauts to drill. But instead, no, you can't train drilling. You got to live drilling. And so they get Bruce Willis and his group, his merry band of drillers, to go to space in order to save the world. And that is what Armageddon is all about.
So what you're saying is the nuclear explosion needs to come from inside the asteroid, from inside the house.
Yeah, if you put a nuclear bomb in your house will blow up. If you put a nuclear bomb on your roof, your house will be fine.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Also, I have an overarching comment about the way this movie is structured, which is somebody thought that this was a really great idea for a disaster spectacle kind of movie, to have Earth have the peril of getting hit by an asteroid, except then they realized, well, but if it's got a happy ending and the Earth doesn't get hit by an asteroid, how is it a disaster spectacle?
Mm-hmm.
And so throughout this movie, lots of really kind of questionable / unrelated things happen just to keep the people who are there for explosions in their seats. And it starts with, you know, big like rocks hit New York City. Later, Paris is wiped out by a meteor. These are said to be sort of related to the asteroid, but that doesn't really make any sense. They're really just there to keep you interested. Also, in that scene,
I think they say that the big rock like came through the asteroid belt, and so these got picked up
and flung,
or like knocked out of the way.
Yeah,
somehow
it's paper thin, because really what they want is how do you make a movie about averting destruction, but you need to have the destruction in the movie.
Yeah. Warning shots that
and
take
so
out
New York
Paris
in an open in an opening scene, New York is hit by meteors, and this is one of my again, there are a few places where I did stop and say, but the science, and then realized that the movie came and hit me on the head and said, no, none of that science. But I did laugh at the fact, and there are people out there, there are Armageddon apologists out there who say it's a comedy, you need to treat it like a comedy. And it's like, well, lots of bad movies are funny. Doesn't mean they're comedies. But I do love the fact that when the swarm of meteors hits New York City, every single one of these little rocks that come out of the sky explodes like it's a grenade,
mm-hmm.
which it's just a rock. It would just hit. It wouldn't explode. And also the small rocks, the small rocks don't get through. They just burn up. In this movie, what happens is if rocks come from space, they zoom through the atmosphere and they rain down on a city like somebody is shooting a bunch of grenades at the city. That's just how it works.
It's kind of like Independence Day. All right. It's like perfect alignment with major cities. Like, no one cares if this hits the middle of nowhere, Arkansas, but it has to hit Manhattan and Paris. And
Paris. 70% of the Earth's surface is water, and it's like, nope, this hit Paris. Mm-hmm. And then also, if this hit Paris, completely leveled it with a fireball, which is, you know, I think more accurate. But then later we get a cut back to it, and like, but the Arc de Triomphe is still there next to the crater, and it's fine. Which is like, no, you just showed the whole of Paris getting blown up, but now part of it is. That's another movie, by the way, Independence Day, which preceded this movie by a couple of years. I would say there's an example of a movie in this tradition, which is mm-hmm. a big, loud, dumb blockbuster,
mm-hmm.
like super dumb. Sorry, fans of Independence Day. That movie is spectacularly dumb. Not as dumb as Armageddon, but it's dumb and loud.
It's never aliens, except when it is.
There's no aliens in Armageddon. I will say that for it. The Liftoff is theoretically a space podcast, so let's talk about the space shuttles. They have magic Air Force space shuttles in this, which is in a movie that basically says reality and science and things don't matter, don't even think about it. Somebody, at several points in this movie, I can see that whoever their science, poor, sad science advisor was like, please just put in a line of dialogue about how the space station is rotating so that you can explain why nobody is weightless. And then there's the... You can't just show a regular space shuttle that has all this stuff on it. You need to show like an alternate space shuttle that looks like the space shuttle, but was different. And so the space shuttles they fly in this movie, and there are two, and they launch simultaneously from right next to each other.
Yeah,
which
that's
is
not how that works.
Really great. Are the X-71 Magic Air Force classified space shuttles.
I want to talk about the space shuttles in detail. Yeah, it's fine. Okay. The shuttles, we know it can't do what this can do.
Can go around the moon.
Can go around
and,
the moon. Okay.
Land a whole team of people who have a spacious interior of their mm-hmm. space shuttle
yes.
on the moon. No, they can't.
Or yeah. So you have Freedom and Independence, because this movie, we're going to talk about this, very like...
USA!
Yes.
USA!
That. But the X-71s, like you said, they launch side by side, which I'm pretty sure would destroy them both mm-hmm. with shockwaves and sound.
Yes.
They have solid rocket boosters that seem to reignite a couple of times mounted up high, like above the wings, which solid rocket boosters don't
no.
work that way. When they, this, this, I said this out loud while watching this movie with my wife.
Is this the Prestemico moment?
Well, that was pretty.
That made me shout. Prestemico, you know, you're like, you go through main engine cutoff, but they jettison the external tank, which is the fuel source for the main engines. And then they refuel at the Russian space station.
Where does the fuel go?
Where does the fuel go? Which is why I think those things that look like SRBs that are on the shuttle itself are actually something else. They're like fuel.
No, they got nozzles on the back, and they
I don't know.
They are lit when they go around the moon, I think.
if I were the science consultant on this movie, and thank goodness my life has not taken me down a path like that, I would say keep the external tank when they go to the Russian space station and then refill it and then jettison it. But that's not what they do. Anyway, what drove you insane about this launch of these shuttles?
Well, when they get to the space station, which they don't call anything, they just call it the Russian space station.
The Russian space station.
The cosmonaut says, "Welcome to the Russian space station." I feel like he would call it by its name, but, you know, whatever. But you're right. They initiate a spin to have artificial gravity on board.
Right, because this movie is too cheap to have people actually floating around.
Can't do that. They start spinning it before they dock. So he starts spinning it, and they have to hit a moving target. Now, in something like Interstellar, which they do some of this, super cool shots, right? Like where he has to match the rotation, and so the camera actually slows down as the rotation begins to equalize. These graphics are not awesome.
The magic shuttles just swoop in.
Yeah.
And bang, they're right.
Boom. Just like this earthworm tunnel sucks to the side of it. I just like, why are you spinning before you dock? Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Whatever. I mean, okay. I like that they had to have, I mean, they needed the refueling scene because they needed some excitement between the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie, right? So you need something dramatic to happen. I like that they are sort of leaning on, okay, the shuttle's fuel is all taken by launch, so we need to refuel. That all makes sense. We've talked about that on the regular show about going to Mars. You're probably going to need to refuel in low Earth orbit, and there's different companies working on that, including SpaceX. But they're fueling with liquid oxygen, I think, and you know, that starts leaking and then very slowly creates a fire, which I'm pretty sure would happen basically instantaneously.
Yeah, but there's a lot of speed things where there are things that would happen very slowly in space that happen fast. And there are a lot of things that would happen very fast in space that happen very slowly.
Yeah. The timing of this movie is on like dramatic standard time. Like whatever
speed
makes
of plot
it the most exciting. Do it that
way.
Well,
at the end, when they land, I mean, it's very clear that they must have been like in orbit for a while. But, you know, as far as the movie's concerned, it's like, no, they just landed. It's fine, which I get.
Yeah.
I get for dramatic purposes. But
sure.
But there are, it goes a little bit much where it's like we swoop in to dock. It's like, really? You know? I don't know. You could cut to, I feel like there's a movie that could be made with even almost this script that would be a little bit more scientifically accurate just by choosing to, you know, not have the shot of the space shuttle swooping in, but instead have a shot of the space shuttle kind of like, you know, docking, just like coming, you cut to, the space shuttle got closer and now they're docking and now they can get away. But Michael Bay is not interested in your tasteful docking scenes there.
No. Yeah. The shuttle survived the space station explosion. Which,
yeah,
there's
a lot of jump in the shuttle and push a couple of buttons and we're going to jet out of here before there's an explosion.
But just in time to get Ben Affleck back on board because you don't want him to burn up on the space station.
No.
But these shuttles have, you know, the thermal tiles all along the bottom, which get knocked off when a bird flies by.
Yeah. I was going to say the most unrealistic thing in the entire movie may be that after going through multiple explosions and a giant hail of little bits of rock to get to the asteroid, and then on the asteroid they get pelted with more rock, and then leaving the asteroid they get pelted with more rocks, that the next time we see that space shuttle it's just landing in Florida, because that's the part where I was like, okay movie, I know you don't want to talk about it, but that thing would have like be a Swiss cheese. It would be unable to go through the atmosphere. You would need to, you know, show them jettisoning. I mean, the space shuttle has so many different features. Why not just have it like emit a capsule escape pod something, and they get picked up with that? But they don't. So, I again, my brain just kept on saying, "But that's not how that." But okay, fine. But that's not. All right. Yeah. Yeah, because these shuttles, the real shuttle was very fragile.
It is. Was.
And these guys, these Air Force shuttles are not like that, Stephen. I think that's the answer, is you haven't met the X-71.
Yeah, well, they're painted in space gray, so they're for professionals.
Did you see that our the Saturn V at Johnson Space Center without the building built around it was in a shot?
I did notice that, where I think on screen it says Houston, Texas, just to make sure you know which Houston. Be confusing. Yeah. Yes, I saw that outside. It's like, oh, hi. You don't have a building around you yet.
Yeah, it does now.
The NASA facilities do sort of crack me up. You and I have both been fortunate enough to visit several NASA facilities over the years. None of them have dramatic lighting like in this movie, right? None of them look as cool as Mission Control does in here. Like, look, Mission Control is cool, but it's like a bunch of people in front of PCs with screens, and everything's very well lit and very, you know, kind of messy in a way, but this is very dramatically lit, and Billy Bob Thornton has like shadow cutting across his face as he tells people the bad news. That sort of made me chuckle.
So Apollo 13 came out 3 years before this movie, and it's very clear that one of the goals of the of this screenplay is to get the mission control drama of Apollo 13. And Billy Bob Thornton's going to be your Ed Harris character. And they do the, you know, let's go around for go, no go scene. And there are a bunch of scenes like that where the Billy Bob Thornton stuff, they want to play on your recollection of Apollo 13, and they want to play those notes. It's ridiculous here, but they do, especially since Liv Tyler is just wandering around shouting at people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but they do that. Also, another thing that made me laugh, rueful laugh, sad laugh, was they keep referring to Capcom, keeps calling out that he's the Capcom, and that kept bugging me too, because the Capcom is the capsule communicators, the person on the ground who's talking to space. They say this is Houston. They don't say this is Capcom. This is Capcom Houston.
Yeah,
but the Capcom guy keeps saying this is Capcom Houston. I'm like, oh, you're so close. But you're showing up, you learned a word, Capcom, and you want to use it. Okay, all right.
Oh, boy. So they use the moon to speed up.
They do. They do a little gravitational slingshot to go around the backside and come out of the moon's radio shadow, basically, to confront the asteroid, which is not an asteroid, right? It's not actually an asteroid. It's not a big chunk of rock. It's like a big chunk of rock that has a cloud around it.
Yeah,
that's kind of like a comet, sort of,
yes.
Except not.
But it's, also, it's spooky, like, looking, blue and green, and it emits its own light in places.
Yeah, yeah, it's spooky.
Yeah,
it's creepy.
Slingshot around the moon, like, okay, like that's how roughly like that happens. So I can I can get on board with that. They do lose a shuttle right after this maneuver coming up behind it. There's a lot of debris. I think earlier in the movie, Billy Bob was like, we're going to go around the moon, and the moon's gravity will like pull off some of this debris, so you'll have like a clean shot. And that doesn't really pan out. And I forget which of the shuttles, because the cutting is so fast, you can't tell who's dead and who's not.
The one with Ben Affleck on it gets crashed.
Yes, whichever one that is. And
the one with Bruce Willis is fine.
The Air Force people flying, like, hey, go get in the cargo hold. You'll be safe there. Wink, wink. And then they get hit with a bunch of rocks, and then they get sucked out the front of the shuttle, which is going 22,000 miles an hour, but the vacuum of space pulls them out and ejects them perfectly to hit the windshield, but not break it, of the other shuttle behind them.
It's it's like a car, like hitting something in your car.
Yeah. It's very upsetting.
Yes. There's a period in the movie toward the end that I can see when people say you've got to take it as a funny movie, as a comedy. There are some ridiculously funny things late in the movie when they have reached the asteroid and they're doing the drilling.
Space dementia.
Space dementia. Steve Buscemi gets space dementia and shouts at one point. I wrote it down. It's like, this is all wrong. We shouldn't even be here. Ha ha.
That's what I thought, all right, watching it.
That was exactly. I thought that was really funny. There's the you and your men are the biggest mistake in the history of NASA.
Sick burn.
I want to talk about the convenience of the connection they have with NASA, because that's kind of amazing too. So they have to do remote detonation of the nuclear bomb, because they're going to lose contact with the space shuttle after like 5 minutes, and it looks like they might not be able to drill to the center. And even though the bomb being detonated on the outside, as we've established with the grenade rule, open hand grenade doesn't hurt your hand, they're still going to do it, because you're not going to send a nuclear bomb to an asteroid and not blow it up, right?
Sure.
But they got to do it right then, before finding out whether Bruce Willis can drill more and figure this out, because they're going to lose radio contact. And so then they do, and there's a standoff, and Bruce Willis convinces the guy eventually, after they fight, to turn off the detonator. and Billy Bob Thornton is working against the Air Force guys at Mission Control and all of this ridiculous stuff. But what happens after this is all resolved and they decide that they're not going to let them remote detonate it and they're going to keep drilling is radio contact is immediately reestablished and is perfectly clear for the rest of the movie. So it's one of those things that is like, it's an obstacle only to create that scene. And then immediately the obstacle is taken away. Mm-hmm. Just like the detonation doesn't make any sense based on the premise of the movie, which is that they can't detonate it then. But in the midst of this are a lot of funny lines, which is why I think people enjoy this part of the movie, perhaps, including the line, actual line from a character, "This is turning into a surrealistic nightmare." I thought that was funny. And that's
he
about
turned to the camera and winked.
Yeah, and that's about when the one Air Force guy takes out a gun and is going to shoot Bruce Willis. And there's this like, why do you have a gun in space? And I'm like, okay, all right. Also, related to this, when they're trying to do the remote detonation, they do the whole War Games thing where they got like a briefcase and they got two keys and they got to turn the keys and they get the little code out. And it's the secret code of like a bunch of letters that allows the bomb to go off. But they've got this whole system like they're going to do a nuclear launch, except it's not a nuclear launch. It's just like to get the code, at which point somebody goes to a keyboard and starts typing in the letters like they're redeeming an iTunes gift code. I don't understand how that system works. That's just what I'm saying.
It's two-factor authentication.
Yeah. And the defusing the bomb scene does end with the classic moment, which is the, oh, which wire do I cut, red or blue? We only have 3 seconds. Red. No, blue. Because that's in every bomb detonation scene. Do they know that that's... I can't tell. I can't tell if they think that that's how bombs are defused or if they thought it would be ironically funny that they did it because everybody recognizes that. I can't tell anymore.
Meanwhile, Ben Affleck has... Okay, their asteroid cars. What are they called? The... Armadillo. They have machine guns on them because, for reasons, and they shoot through the side of the crash shuttle and make their way to find the other shuttle 20-something miles away, and they save the day.
They do. They drive along a lot of very smooth roads, which if you've ever been off-roading at all, you know that even on Earth, where people have gone, if it's off a road, it's extremely bumpy and jagged and bad.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of sci-fi movies can't afford to show that or don't want to bother. And so you end up with, this is a completely unexplored space that happens to have a very well-groomed dirt road right here. The Lost in Space show on Netflix was like this, where they were on an unexplored planet and there were just dirt roads everywhere. And this has that, where Ben Affleck is driving the Armadillo down a lot of smooth roads. But they do end up having to jump a canyon using the low gravity. Remember that? Low gravity of the asteroid? Well, it turns out that they use it to do a big Evel Knievel jump and they're going to die because they're trapped up above. But the Russian guy climbs outside, says that the fuel line is iced up, and sprays something on it, like sprays some compressed air or something on it.
Sure.
In space. And then it's fine. Let's see. This is also one of my favorite scenes in the movie is right here, which is... the one I remember the most clearly from watching it on home video back in the 90s, which is Bruce Willis radios back to Houston and says, "Houston, you have a problem because I promised my little girl that I'm going to come home."
Oh, boy. Good one, Bruce.
Take that. It's so uplifting. So much unearned drama in this movie. It is great. So Ben Affleck sort of saves the day because the other Armadillo gets blown up real good.
Yeah. All along the way, Bruce's crew is just dying left and right, right? Like, it's going poorly. They break a bunch of equipment. A bunch of people are getting hurt.
They hit a gas pocket eventually that blows up the Armadillo.
Just like in the first scene we saw them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Ben Affleck is drilling on the new Armadillo and he hits something that looks like it's a gas pocket. And we get the callback to the beginning of the movie where Bruce Willis doesn't trust Ben Affleck, who is in love with his daughter. And he doesn't trust him as a driller. And there's this real father son kind of relationship between them. And he says, "You got to trust me. I can do this." And he does trust him and he does do it. So
my wife Mary made a good point in watching this part of the movie. Like, everything Ben Affleck has tried fails before this, right? So like he blows the hole in the rig in the first scene, and there's an issue in training and he blows it. And it's like, that would be earned by Ben Affleck if he was right and Harry was wrong.
Right.
But that's not how it goes. And so It's like, you need to trust me, even though this entire movie, my reckless decisions have caused trouble.
Well, now's the time in the movie where you trust him. Stephen, come on. It's the running time of the movie. You just check the movie. Does he know that he's in a movie? Yeah. And it's time to trust him. This movie makes me appreciate The Martian that much more. That is a movie that is built around a sort of similar premise. It's got a much more capable, talented director. Shows a reasonable escalation of issues and puts the character and characters in positions where they have problems to solve and things to overcome. And if you ask me, like, well, what would be an example of something like Armageddon, except done well, I would point to something like The Martian, which still has action. It still has character stuff. There's a lot going on in it. There's a lot of science stuff in it, but it is not only better at the science, but I think it's just a more reasonable movie and yet still is very exciting. Whereas here, it's like whenever the script is lagging, they just have some rocks fall and kill some people, and then they continue on from that.
Got to keep moving. They promise his little girl to be home.
Yeah, well, and Gruber dies. It's just, sorry to everybody out there, that's one of the lines in the movie, is we lost Gruber. Gruber's dead.
I was like, wait, which one was he? He was one of the Air Force people, right?
He's one of the Air Force guys.
Yeah, Gruber. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, it's, Gruber always dies in movies with Bruce Willis in it. Huh? Anyway, so they have to draw straws because the trigger is now dead. Their whole, like, either a rock hit it or whatever. I don't even know. But they have to draw straws to say who's going to go down and manually detonate it and stay behind and die. And they have straws on the space shuttle.
Or wiring? Do they find some like wires in a... We don't need these cables anymore.
Yeah, just rip them right out. So Ben Affleck, AJ, draws the straws. And Bruce Willis is like, oh, I'll take him down. So take him down. Let me explain. This shuttle has many modes of egress. It's got docking ports. It's got a ramp that comes down that lets you drive out the little car. And it's got this cool, like, elevator that takes you down, takes two people down to the ground in an airlock.
Through the thermal tiles.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. And so that's where Bruce Willis takes Ben Affleck and then rips out his air hose, thereby making it impossible for him to go, so that Bruce Willis can sacrifice himself and that Ben Affleck can go back and marry his daughter. And you were always a son to me, and it's very emotional. And then he's going to go and blow up the asteroid just in time before they reach the zero whatever point where the asteroid will hit the Earth instead of having the pieces of the asteroid go around it. And they have to get the shuttle launched, which causes there's a lot of problem in the shuttle. The shuttle has so much space. It's so spacious. You and I just were in that shuttle mock-up. And it's just like, this is like a 747, this space shuttle. It has got lots of room, but they're having an issue with the engines. And in one of the many misogynistic things that litter this movie, the woman astronaut who has almost nothing to do, unlike most of the other astronauts in this movie, she's just around to be in the co-pilot seat, basically. The Russian who's tagging along with them, she's trying to fix the engines, and he physically throws her out of the way so that he can be a real man and just smash it with a wrench, which, guess what? Smashing the whatever with a wrench totally solves it. Stupid girls trying to fix things. You just hit it with a wrench. I mean, the movie starts literally the first scene on Earth is a guy who is doing his astronomy thing and looking up at the sky to try to find asteroids or whatever, and discovers the asteroid, yelling at his wife loudly and at length. And I thought, oh boy, it's going to be one of those movies, isn't it? And yeah, it is one of those movies. There are very few women in it, and it's Liv Tyler, who is girlfriend/daughter. That's her role. There's the useless astronaut who just gets in the way of the Russian with his wrench. There's a bunch of strippers, and there's the naggy wife of the astronomer. Is that it? I think that's it.
I think that's it.
I think that's all the women in the movie.
Not good.
Nope.
Not good at all.
another reason to not love this movie, for sure. So Bruce Willis blows up the asteroid.
Saves the day.
Saves the day. Now the Earth will be pelted with smaller rocks.
Yes.
No, it's, and it's then fine.
People
it's
come out,
solved.
Celebrate, and everyone...
Too bad about Paris, right? Yay! It's Paris was completely destroyed. Oh, yeah. It's fine.
Oh, New York.
We're alive.
Oh, Shanghai. Everyone's from the 1950s in this part of the movie. There's like children who have built wooden space shuttles in front of like a JFK sign. So I guess maybe the 60s. It's like, it feels very like, there's an undercurrent to this movie of like patriotism that I'm uncomfortable with. Like, it's very Americana when you like, you see like the people reacting to the news is very heavily stylized. You know, people around a radio or someone
yes.
in like a...
Yes, there's some Sikhs and Hindus outside of the Taj Mahal.
Mm-hmm.
What? Okay, the world. It's almost like a parade of celebratory stock footage, right? It's not, but it's like that, where it's like, and the world cheered. Hooray.
It's like the end of the prequels, right? Like all the people on different planets are celebrating.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got the fireworks just ready to go. The fireworks mm-hmm. were originally intended for bad things, but now they'll just fire them off for good things.
As long as you don't put your hand around it, you'll be fine.
Also, Steven, you remember when I said that you could use the hatches and the ramp and the elevator to get out of the space shuttle?
Yes.
How do they get out of the space shuttle after it lands?
A water slide.
Yeah.
An inflatable yeah. slide.
It's an airplane inflation slide. Why didn't they take the elevator? Why not the ramp? Walk down the ramp.
In some of those shots, the actors look like they're genuinely having a good time going down the slide. Like,
sure.
I would, like, wouldn't you have fun going down a slide like that? They look genuinely happy. And I think maybe they're happy because they know the movie's over and they're done.
Uh-huh. That's the one fun thing that they got to do in the whole movie, which is go down a slip and slide. Yeah. And that's play some more Aerosmith, because that is the end of Armageddon, which, you know, is a bad movie on... It's bad science. I think it's a bad movie. I think it's a dumb movie. It's very loud. There's lots of explosions. And this is the thing that I've seen argued about the Transformer movies, too, which is, I like the Transformer movies. You go and you turn your brain off and there's lots of explosions and it's fun. And, you know, if it's fun for you, great. I don't understand how that's fun. I don't understand watching things that don't make any sense and explode loudly is fun. I need a little bit more for my brain to put those pieces together.
So not what you're saying is not in the Hall of Fame of space movies.
So, yeah, well, I mean, maybe. Oh, sorry, you said fame. No. Shame, yes, maybe.
Hall
of Shame. It's bad. It's a bad space movie. So, okay, I mentioned this with Transformers. Okay, so the space shuttle in 1998 was what a spaceship was like for Americans, right? I feel like maybe this movie would be better if it was more of a flight of fancy, where it was, you know, 20 years in the future and there was some advanced spaceship and we had a moon base and stuff like that. And it was just like, put it a little bit more science fictional in nature so that it could... Just, I know it would remove it from being like the present day, but it would give the movie a lot of freedom to cut a lot of corners and not have anybody say, wait, right? How does that work? Because it'd be like, it's the future. It's different now. But this movie doesn't do that. And they're using like existing technology and then just kind of like messing it up a little bit. And I don't know. I was never able to let go, because every time that I would be like, okay, this movie's just going to do this, there would be another thing that would be weird, bad science, or misinterpreting something about the space program, or you know, pretzel logic in the actual plot. So and then if all else fails, just throw some rocks and watch some stuff blow up.
Source mistake NASA's ever made.
To send drillers on a space mission. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with Ben Affleck. Just train the astronauts are really good at their jobs. Just train the astronauts to be drilling. But in this movie, drilling is like a metaphysical. It's like you can't teach it. You must walk the path. And somehow Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck can sense what's down there in a way that you can't be taught. Which, okay. So, by the way, I'll recommend a different movie that is also bad that you also should not watch, but that is similar to this movie, which is The Core. The Core is almost the the inverse, and that's from 2003, almost the inverse of this movie. The reason I bring up the chorus, I was going to say, you know, how would Bruce Willis like it if we sent a space shuttle down into one of his drilling things? Would he like that if the tables were turned? And then I thought, that's the plot of the core. The plot of the core is that they send a spaceship to the center of the Earth, and it's really bad. So maybe a future membership special.
I've never heard of this movie. I'm just going
to... Oh, the core? Oh.
I'm going to read the description on IMDb. The only way to save Earth from catastrophe is to drill down to its core and set it spinning again.
Uh-huh. That's right. That's right. It's you can listen to us talk about it on the Incomparable episode 234. Titled The Only Way Out Is In, which is actually the movie poster slogan for the core. The only way out. To the core. You got to go to the core and spin the core up with, like, bombs. They use bombs to spin the core. It really is basically Armageddon, except the opposite direction. So if you haven't seen the core and you enjoyed watching Armageddon or thinking about Armageddon, then check that out, I guess.
Yeah, that'll be in the show notes. You can go find that.
Check out the core. First time I've recommended the core to anyone. Yeah. Sorry, I'll never do it again, ever.
Bad Jason.
Well, it's a lot like this movie. A lot.
Could we be done? I feel like we're done.
Yeah.
Don't go watch it.
No, thank you to members for supporting Relay FM. Switch on. And yes. Don't watch this movie, and we're sorry we even brought it up, but we had to watch it. For 2 hours.
So long.
Yeah, I think I did miss a thing.
Well, members, you're awesome. Thank you so much. You are far better than this movie is. If you haven't checked off Liftoff, if you're a member of some other show and you like space stuff, check us out, relay.fm/liftoff. It is a fortnightly show where Jason and I talk about the space industry, science, astronomy, all sorts of fun stuff. It's a good show. It's very fun to work on it with you.
Yeah. Yeah. We have fun, and there's a lot going on in space. A lot to learn about the universe around us and a lot of stuff going on right now. You may think that with the space shuttle program over and there are no current American launches that there's not as much stuff going on in space, and you would be wrong. There's a lot going on. Very interesting time for space.
Yeah. So check us out if that sounds interesting. And until next time, Jason, say goodbye.
Steven, I don't want to miss a thing.
Isn't it creepy that, like, her dad is singing it as she's, like, hooking up with Ben Affleck? It's very strange, very uncomfortable.